Welcome back. I hope the sitting time was of benefit. I am aware it's not always pleasant, again, but just to be able to hold space together as we sit again in this global sangha. Today, I wanted to, I don't know how quite it is, but wanted to talk about how do we work with our expectations in the sense of how we think our life should go and what happens when things don't work out and what that means. And I know this personally, and I've talked with people who sort of, sometimes we feel like we can't get traction and everything isn't, things are not going our way. And even that sense of things should go our way. Years ago, I remember back in the day when we could be on site for day longs at Spirit Rock, and it was a day long with Aya Anand Bodhi and one of her fellow nuns. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting her name, as a day long. And someone had asked the Aya's a question in terms of the woman saying pretty much, I'm doing everything I should be doing. I'm doing yoga and meditating and, I don't know, eating kale and praying and all of these things that we do. And she said, and yet things don't work out for me. And the woman, it wasn't Anaya Andanodvodi, it was another woman. She was like, why in the world would you expect that they would? Well, okay, there's that. And it was such a beautiful lesson. It was pretty, it was definitely sort of the mantra, sort of cutting through delusion that came in. And she's like, that's complete delusion, that we have an expectation that we think things should work out, because part of what we think should work out, that keyword, we think, we've sort of created a world that we think we should be living. And it doesn't work out that way. But in fact, we've actually merely created it in our own mind. That Joseph Campbell's quote, which isn't quite right, but something along the lines of, at what point will we give up the life we think we should be living to be able to live the life that is before us? And this way that we can convince ourselves, and it's conditioning, cultural conditioning, it can be family conditioning. It feels like sometimes it's in the air of a certain part of here in the States, dominant white culture notion of, well, if you go to the right school and you work hard and you try, then things will work out. And this image of what that looks like is, it can be different, but it has a kind of a similar tone, this idea of success and financial success and marital success and all these different ways that don't fit for many of us anyway. But the ways in which we've kind of been so inculcated to believe how things should be going and they don't. And then when they don't, it's like, oh my God, what did I do? I've totally messed up. And if I could go back and redo this choice, then maybe I wouldn't be in this position. You know, all the entanglements that we can create to try and figure out how we got ourselves into this mess, rather than being able to say, well, right, this is just life. Heidi Bourne, who sits a lot with Sylvia's group on Wednesday as a teacher, and I believe it's Heidi, her version, it's either that or her husband, her version of the Four Noble Truths, and excuse my language here, is like, shit happens. We cause a lot of it. There's a way to stop it. And the Eightfold Path is that way. But being able to, and I wish that we could grow up with this notion of things happen. Things happen for us. Things happen to us. But this notion that only if we work hard enough, or for those of us here, like if we're a good girl in some way, then everything's going to work out. Like, no, it's such a setup for profound suffering. And I've kind of become really working with this for me with my daughter. And I have all these ideas of what I think her education should look like. And it's not looking like that. And my own angsty, worried energy of like, what am I doing wrong? Should I, and very much what I just laid out before, I've been running through on my own of how I should have done this and what did I do? And if 5 years ago, if I had made, you know, trying to put a puzzle together that I should have done to not be in the situation where I am. And then just realizing, as you know, in this past week, 2 weeks, when it's been kind of acute of, why do I created this whole idea of what I think should be happening for her, for myself, and the ways in which we do that, right? I share this poem, Sarah Kay. I love this woman. She's maybe now, I don't know, 28, beautiful young poet out of New York. Who actually came to my daughter's school in third grade, but it's another story. Poem called Accidents. One time, there was an X-ray accident. It left me with a transparent chest. Sometimes this is inconvenient, like during job interviews or first kisses. Sometimes it's not so bad, like when the Hummingbird Orchestra is in town and they need a substitute conductor. Once there was a laundry accident. Now everything I own looks like funfetti cake. Once there was a microwave accident and it melted my shoulders into old crayon tops. Now I have stopped counting the accidents. So they don't count as accidents. Now they are just decisions, like the mousetrap decision, which scared me awake again, or the refrigerator decision, which left me with melting ice cream in a chilly apartment, or the locked bathroom door decision, which left me with a accident. Listen, there's a hummingbird inside my chest. He is cranky with me. He has been waiting to go to sleep for hours, and I have kept him awake with my racket. Once there was a ceiling fan accident. Now there is broken glass everywhere, and I can't turn off the lights. Once there was a boyfriend accident, I mean decision, an iceberg decision, a poison apple accident. Sometimes I invite experts to help me figure out what is going wrong, and they took a look inside and checked the wiring. They tell me someone has placed the panic button awfully close to the ignition. There has been a motorcycle accident. Now nobody can stop staring. There was a domino accident. And sometimes my days fall into each other faster than I can catch them. There is a beach in Montauk where rocks are piled from the shoreline to the dunes. When water pools in across the stones, they knock together like broken bones. And you can feel the ground below you shift and move. But when the sea rolls out, each pebble knocks and tumbles down the shore. The accidental orchestra plays between the rocks like loud applause. The ocean cries encore. Right? These accidents, these mistakes that we've made, how the power that we give these words to the narration of our life. What if they were not? Like she's saying, what if accident became decision? What if accident became choice? What if accident or mistake, or excuse my language, became serendipity, became a change, became a transition? How can we loosen ourselves from what can be a pretty strict or conditioned way of how we think things should go? The marriage that doesn't work, the job that doesn't work, the bodies whose health is not where we think it should be. One of my Make me cry a little bit. One of my dearest friends from childhood, she had a 10-year battle with cancer, and in the beginning of her, started with breast cancer, and we would have these conversations. She's like, "I did everything right." She did yoga for 5 days a week, and she ate kale, and she, lived all did all the right things, and yet she got really sick. And that kind of existential grappling of it doesn't matter, right? To some degree, it doesn't matter what we do. Things will happen in our lives that are unplanned, unexpected, unwanted, and things will happen in our lives that are amazing and surprises and beautiful. And oh my gosh, I never knew. And thank goodness this happened because then this happened. That line of one door closes, a window opens. We can forget. Because we can kind of solidify ourselves into it's like this, which is a line I say all the time. It's like this as a more of an invitation to equanimity, stop fighting. But it can also be rather it should be like it should be like this. My marriage should have gone like this or whatever. And it's like, but it didn't. It was not for lack of trying. It was not for lack of effort. Again, that saying of like if you miss the boat, if you miss the train. It wasn't yours to get on. And how can we, in these times of our lives and of transition or changes, or like, oh my God, what is happening in my life? Those senses, which I think many of us can relate to. It's like, okay, so here it is. Can we come back to that sense of, yeah, but I am alive and I am breathing, and sometimes our breathing is easier than others? Can we start to look for that which is good, even when things being able to really reach in. Sometimes it's like, well, my arms work. And my daughter and I will, not so much anymore because she's older, but would always do sort of what are we grateful for at night. And just sort of being playful, like, how about fingernails? You know, like, how can we be able to orient in our lives in a way that even when things are not going our way, we can still have a sense of connection to our heart and a sense of belief that we don't always know. And we can create a very clear sense of how we think it should be. And then it doesn't meet up, and then we can either beat ourselves up, blame ourselves, or blame our boss or our partner or our kids or whomever else we can possibly blame, blame them because it's easier, or just the conditioning can be such. And it's like, okay, but what if it wasn't meant to go that way? We don't really know. We didn't come with a book that says this at this stage, this is what's going to happen. We kind of play things by ear, right? Maybe. And things do happen to us. And I forget who reframes that to happens for us to learn. A friend of mine's mom would say that the soul does not care what it puts the personality through. The soul, if one believes in such a thing, comes here to learn and to grow. And we're going to be in situations where they're like, this is terrible. Okay, so how can we use whatever situations we're in that we like, that we don't like, that we chose or that happened as a means to really grow? You know, who are our perfect teachers? Generally, those are the very difficult people or very difficult circumstances. Some of you maybe might have joined me on the, I did two divorce day longs at Spirit Rock, and I entitled it a Gateway to Liberation. And I wasn't kidding. It was like one of the worst experiences of my life, and how to be able to use and harness the growth opportunities to really find and forage freedom. What I was attached to, what I thought, thinking patterns, ways that I had created my own suffering. Can I release that and step into a place of embodied deep equanimity of, okay, it's like this and it will change, right? Can we lean into that essential truth of all things are impermanent? They, you know, what arises will pass away. Can we rest there? Can we give ourselves permission to pause and rest and say, I don't know how this all is supposed to go. If I can orient my life to be guided by the constellation of that which we value, and we've done this exercise before, the qualities of the heart, of the paramis, the 10 perfections, of, so I might not be able to pull out right now, but of generosity and integrity and wisdom and resolve. A healthy, wise use of our energy, truthfulness, patience, equanimity, metta, and something. One more. Can we allow ourselves to be guided by that which is our heart, most resonates with our heart? You know, qualities of joy from Desmond Tutu and Dalai Lama's book of humility and perspective and humor. Acceptance, generosity is in there with them as well. Forgiveness, patience. That was the 10th. What do we really value? And if we can align our life with that which we value, then we can be able to roll a little bit more with the ways that we're going to get slammed or pummeled, or we just can't quite get traction. And it's like, who said we always have traction? Who said it's supposed to work out? We come into this life, if we believe in karma, we believe in past lives, whatever, it's like, okay, how can we use circumstances that are challenging to be able, that can tenderize our heart such that we can show up as with a deeper sense of humility of like, oh, wow, it really is hard here. To that point, I want to read a poem. And I know I read it maybe more than I should, but it fits in this because the poet, Naomi Shihab Nye, shared in an interview with Krista Tippett, on the On Being podcast, that in when she was, this poem that I will read came about because she and her husband were on a honeymoon somewhere in South Africa, South America, I believe, and they were traveling on a bus, and the bus got held up, and someone was taken off the bus and killed, and she and her husband were robbed of everything they could, everything, their passports, all their money. They had nothing, and they're stranded in this little town and in the middle of nowhere. And from that experience came this poem, Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go. So you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness, how you ride and ride thinking the bus will never stop and the passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the windows forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in the white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak it till your voice catches with the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head to say, it is I you have been looking for. And then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. And the sense of being able to allow that which happens to us, that's what happens for us, again, to tenderize the heart such that that kindness can come forward. It is only then that we know when we have embraced the sorrows, allow that to be felt as the deepest thing that this kindness comes from. Sylvia Bornstein says, what other response is there but compassion when it comes down to it? The amount of suffering in this world is inordinate. How much of it do we create on our own by having this idea of how we think things should go? Sue is a poem I share more often than others, but I love it. And it's Alison Litterman's, because even the word obstacle is an obstacle. Try to love everything that gets in your way. The Chinese woman in the flowered bathing caps murmuring together in Mandarin, doing leg exercises in your lane while you execute 36 furious laps, one for every item on your to-do list. The heavy-bellied man who goes thrashing through the water like a horse with a harpoon stuck in its side, whose breathless tsunamis rock you from your course. Teachers all, learn to be small and swim through the obstacles like a minnow without grudges or memory. Dart toward your goal, sperm to egg. Think obstacle. Thinking obstacle is another obstacle. Try to love the teenage girl idly lounging against the ladder, showing off her new tattoo, "This life is mine," in thick blue-black letters on her ivory instep. Be glad she'll have that to look at all her life and keep going. Keep going. Swim by an uncle in the lane next to yours who is teaching his nephew how to hold his breath underwater, even though kids are not allowed at this hour. Someday, years from now, this boy who is kicking and flailing in the exact place you want to touch in turn will be a young man at a wedding on a boat, raising his champagne glass in a toast when a huge wave hits, washing everyone overboard. He'll come up coughing and spitting like he is now, but he'll come up like a cork. Alive. So your moment of impatience must bow in service to a larger story. Because if something is in your way, it is going your way, the way of all beings towards darkness, towards light. And how would it be to imagine moving through our lives with this sense of awareness of our own impatience, allowing our impatience to bow to the service of a larger story, because if something is in your way, it is going your way, the way of all beings towards darkness, towards light. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And just take a moment, check in. How's the body? How's the heart? How have these words resonated or not? And I'm going to ask each of us, to the extent that it feels not comfortable, but to the extent that it feels helpful, to kind of consider those moments, markers, times in our lives transitions, opportunities that have been challenging, that sense of, oh my God, things are not going my way. Right? Like, what am I doing? God knows I have certainly called psychics to get input from a different realm to be like, what is going on? No. Or in some way, we can feel like I must be doing something wrong because this isn't working out. Let me put that in quotes. This isn't working. I've done something wrong. And again, that can be in matters of health, relationships that have not worked out, jobs that have not worked out, housing situations that have not worked out. There are any number of other situations that have, quote, not worked out. And even to pause here to consider, what does that even mean, not worked out? Not worked out because I had a thought of how it should go. I had a desire, I had a clinging, I had an attachment to how I think it should have gone. That is a fabrication of the mind. What would it be like to allow ourselves to hold the expectations we have of ourselves and of our lives as fabrications of the mind? It's something we made up, we have created through conditioning, through causes, through desire, through whatever, understanding how we got there with no fault or blame here at all. It's just being curious of what might it be like to be like, oh, wow. I have created a lot of my own suffering because of an expectation that I created in my mind. And what would it be like to put that down? To live the life we are living rather than fighting against it because it's not the life we either wanted or thought we should be living. Can we hold the accidents, the decisions, the opportunities, the obstacles as teachers? We come into this human realm, I believe, to learn. And sometimes we learn things we don't like. And sometimes things are really, really hard. Can we offer up those challenges as a practice to tenderize the heart, strengthen our resolve to live in the life in accordance with what we really value? Can we use all of these things that happen in our lives to kind of purify us from these pretenses, to be able to lead from our hearts and feel strengthened and ennobled by the goodness and kindness of our hearts?